You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get your last word.
The following podcast is a W2M Network partnership production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Running Wild Podcast. I'm your co-host, Rich. Alongside me, as always, my co-host, Runs.
Yes, sir.
Just before we get started, I want to remind you that we're being brought to you in partnership with Last Word on ProWrestling.com, PWPonderings.com, and the Wrestling to the Max Network. All right, so let's get started with, I guess, chronologically. On Friday, this past Friday night, there was by the time you guys listen to this, actually, it'll be a week after, but there was the Ring of Honor All-Star Extravaganza 8. So I think this was like a sleeper pay-per-view. I mean, on paper, it looked really good. Some of the matches were pretty solid, but at the same time, it felt like it could have been a little predictable, and I thought that the show really over-delivered as a whole.
I mean, I think, you know, we discussed it last week, how it was definitely a little bit predictable, but the wrestling is always a top-notch on Ring of Honor, and the Ladder War main event you knew was going to be something special. You know, for it to be the main event with the six guys involved, you just knew it was going to be crazy. So I agree with you that it was better than I thought it would be going in, so I'll go with that. But I didn't have high expectations because, you know, it kind of just was what it was. It was a pay-per-view with not a lot of storyline build-up and just kind of a bridging point, you know?
Yeah, so I mean, just kind of going over the card, I guess would make sense to approach it in order. The one problem that I had that got reflected later in the night was because of the television title match. So the show started off with Dijak coming out, and we actually had Brian Fury in tow with him. They kind of had a little bit of an entourage. He's from the Massachusetts area, so the crowd was really behind him. Fish came out second, and you know the size difference. I like the story they told in the ring that basically Bobby Fish went after his legs to kind of even them out, even before the match started when they went to do the code of honor. Dijak kind of tried to impose and look down on Bobby Fish, so he pulled his hand and pulled him toward the corner, climbed up to the second rope so that they were eye to eye, which is amazing because he didn't climb on the first rope. He had to go to the second rope, and then they shook hands. But then Fish went after him with strikes to the legs, which ended up telling the story for the match because basically for the entirety of the match, now you had Dijak nursing his bad left leg, which affected his moonsault and, you know, ended up affecting the ending when he tried to hit. He did hit Fish with the Feast Your Eyes finisher, but wasn't able to get over to him. And later on, when he went to it again, Fish was able to wriggle out, you know, presumably because Dijak's leg was hurting. And then he actually locked him in a rear naked choke. So, you know, kind of they had been building up what I thought was really effective was Kevin Kelly was talking about the fact that Fish talks about how sometimes he'll use a different move. So it wasn't that unexpected when he ended up using it later. So I thought it was a good match. I was a little upset with the outcome, as apparently was Prince Nana, who said that Dijak disappointed him, but he wouldn't disappoint him again. So that was kind of, I love Nana tweeting in character. But what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is why, part of the reason why I picked Fish to win was because of, you know, I've liked this TV title reign, and I wasn't the biggest fan of Bobby Fish before this title reign, and I've become one since. And, you know, I've just liked his work with the belt. I've liked his in-ring work, and I felt like his character has been built up more. So I've really enjoyed it. And, you know, the little things like going to the top rope or working over the legs, that kind of stuff is what makes someone in Ring of Honor, you know, stand out a little bit, because it's that good psychology and that good technician and that kind of a thing, which I enjoy watching. So I've enjoyed, you know, like I said, I enjoyed the Bobby Fish run. I enjoyed this match. I thought it was a good showing for Dijak. You know, he didn't need to win to take a step up. And you know, that's another reason why I thought Fish would go over. But, you know, I think it worked for both men.
Agreed. Fun note, after last night's Monday Night Raw, where Charlotte pulled the... That's not a moonsault. It's like a...
Oh, my God. The corkscrew moonsault.
The corkscrew moonsault off the top. Dijak tweeted at Charlotte that he was going to have to do something to up his game now that Charlotte's doing the move that he uses. So I thought that was, you know, that's pretty cool because, you know, they don't really work together. They're in different companies, but...
But they will one day.
And it's just, and it's also just really cool to see... I think when you see that a wrestler is a fan, you know, when you see that they're watching it, you know, and enjoying it.
I always like when, like, you know, the Bucks tweet about Kevin Owens or Finn Balor or something, because it's like, oh, that's cool. You're watching, you know, like you're watching your boy on pay-per-view or Raw or whatever it is.
All right, so then right after that, they had the four-corner tag survival, which the winners would become the number one contenders for the tag team championship. So it kind of went the way we talked about last week in many ways. You know, Shane Taylor and Keith Lee with War Machine, they kind of canceled each other out. They were just kind of, you know, continuing that storyline where these men are attacking each other.
This is the first time that I've really seen Keith Lee, and my goodness, like that guy can work, man.
It's scary because with those four.
I mean,
okay, so they're in the tag team division, you know, and I like them as a tag team, but I want to also see them, almost all four of them, I want to see all four of them in singles. Like, they could be singles stars.
Yeah, I mean, I really, really like War Machine as a tag team.
Yeah.
So, great. Them I would keep together, but Keith Lee, man, my God, like, when he goes on his own, oof, the sky's the limit for that guy.
He's crazy big, crazy agile. I want to hear more of him on the mic.
And, like, you know, I think the first time that I heard of them and I looked at their pictures, I was like, this can't be the people that everyone is talking about. And so, like, then I put it in the back of my mind. Then, you know, I just kind of forgot about it. Then I saw them come out again, and I was like, what the hell? Like, really? Like, these are the guys that everyone's hyped sold about this guy? Like, all right. I guess, and then once he came in the match and just started going nuts, I was like, oh, okay, yep, absolutely, I'm on board.
My God, they're just unbelievable.
But yeah, I mean, cause exactly what you were saying, you know, this came down to them kind of taking each other out, and Castle and Cabana versus All Night Express, and I'm not sure what we actually ended up predicting last week, but I think we were all under the belief that Castle and Cabana might win this kind of by default, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there was some discussion, you know, All Night Express has kind of been working it, so they could have earned the title shot there. But also, depending on the tapings and everything, Castle and Cabana, you know, they're good. I think they're a good pairing. They match up well. Castle, if you're listening to his podcast, he's been talking about how he's got tons of shows with Ring of Honor in the future. So, I mean, this could be a legitimate tag team that stays together for a little bit and gives Cabana something to do, because Cabana was another guy like Dijak who I was convinced was going to beat Fish for the title and didn't. So they definitely need to do something with him. If they're not going to give him the TV title now and they're not going to have him in the world title picture, you don't want him just floating around doing nothing, because then I think he becomes a little bit too much comedy and, you know, not enough substance. So
yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, like, that's kind of what Colt Cabana does, is float around doing nothing and just having, like, mid-card entertaining feuds, you know? But, yeah, I would not mind seeing these two as a team for a little while. I think with the tapings, they didn't have the match, but they, like, made another match, right? Like, with the Briscoes or something like that. So it doesn't seem like they're going away. You know, it wasn't a one-weekend thing where they won the match, they got the title shot, now they're done. They wrestled together once or twice at the tapings. They set up a match down the line. So it doesn't seem like, you know, that they're going away anytime soon.
I think that they're going to get the title shots at Glory by Honor, which makes a little... I mean, it's in Chicago, so it'll be Colt's hometown. You know, that's on, I believe, October 15th. So I think that, you know, if we're going to see some, you know, if we're going to see the title shot, I think we can see it there.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And, you know, in Chicago, you know, they already have the beef with the Young Bucks. It was in Chicago where that kind of started. So, mm-hmm. you know, it makes perfect sense.
All right. The next matchup was Kamitachi versus Dragon Lee.
I'm sorry, who?
Tamagotchi versus Dragon Lee. Thank you, Matt Taven there. So this... I've never seen them wrestle before, and I know that last week we had guest Chris Michio on. He had said that these two have put on great matches in New Japan, and I believe in CMLL. This was... I didn't know what... I should have expected it, I guess, after hearing that, but my goodness, this was fantastic.
Yeah, you know, I... it throws me off a little bit when... Before I've even seen two guys wrestle, that people are like, oh, this is the new Psychosis and Juventud or whatever the case. And mm-hmm. I'm like, come on. Like, you know, I remember those matches. And, like, so for me not having seen either of these guys to hear that kind of thing, it throws me off at first a little bit. But I expected something good, and we got it. You know, this was the best Tamagotchi's look to me. You know, I'd never seen Dragon Lee, so this was a good showing. You know, it was what it was. I'm looking forward to seeing where Dragon Lee goes from here. I can't remember what he did at the tapings, but I think he had a singles match with someone that I thought was pretty cool.
I know he faced Bobby Fish.
There you go.
So it should be... Hopefully he does stick around. I mean, I know that when they had Stuka Jr. come up, I thought he was going to be around more often, and it seemed like it was kind of like a weekend deal, you know?
Yeah.
If they're going to incorporate... I don't have a problem with them incorporating guys from CMLL and New Japan, and they're obviously going to do that because of the kind of the deals they've struck. But at the same time, those guys need to be around more and not just... I don't feel like they can just go off the strength of... These guys are great somewhere else. You know, you need to see them more, you know, often, and they have to be developed into some kind of storyline there. So I thought that was effective.
No, yeah, definitely agreed. And from what it sounds like, Dragon Lee is the first of this exchange to, you know, kind of be over on the roster for a while. So that, you know, that'll be a good thing.
Yeah, they're gonna have. I'm not sure if he's going to be part of the CMLL team in the six-man tag match tournament that's coming up. They actually kind of whittled down some of the competitors during the taping so that we know one semifinalist, but we don't know who else is coming out of that. So the CMLL team still has to wrestle. But I don't think that Dragon Lee is part of that team because I think it's a team of their Rudos or the heels down there.
Okay.
All right, the next match, you had Hangman Page versus Kyle O'Reilly, and I think this match is one of those that you were talking about in terms of you knew what was going to happen, but it was going to be a great wrestling match nonetheless. Hangman Page has that. It's almost like he's one-upped Dean Ambrose. I feel like Page is almost a more effective Dean Ambrose and with cooler moveset. He's got that slingshot clothesline that's actually like flipping over the top rope from the apron where Dean just bounces through the ropes. I don't know. I think that they have like the similar look, but I kind of like Paige better. Nonetheless, he looked really good in this match, but you know the match was really there for O'Reilly to win and to build him, I believe, towards final battle.
Yeah, and one side thing that we should have seen coming, but we didn't, was that Adam Page would now seemingly go after Bobby Fish. So, I mean, that makes perfect sense for everyone involved, you know?
Do you think that means that Page ends up being the guy... So Page ends up being the... let's say he beats Fish in the next couple weeks. So then, going into final battle, you've got Cole, the Young Bucks, and Adam Page holding all of Ring of Honor's championships?
which would not be a bad thing. That would be pretty cool.
It'd be pretty cool because then the Bullet Club's going to lose every goddamn title on that show. And I'm going to be super excited. All right. I should. But I digress. All right. So, yeah, that was, Paige was clearly kind of out to help his boy out and injure O'Reilly, basically. So he lost, when he got put into the arm bar, he tapped out very quickly. And then went and grabbed a chair, went to attack O'Reilly, and Fish came out, and that sets the stage for those two. Then we had Silas Young, who did not wrestle, but had a short promo. He came out, and one of the things I liked was he was kind of complaining that they're not in the six-man tag tournament. One of the reasons was because they couldn't find someone else to team with them, to him and the Bruiser, to enter the tournament. So that, I thought that was pretty funny. And then he reminded everyone, or they reminded everyone who didn't watch the Lockport VOD, that Silas Young had won the Honor Rumble and that he would be going on to face whoever the champion is. Now we know it's Adam Cole in Lakeland, Florida on October 22nd.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good promo from Silas. I didn't like the, I'm going to be the champion because you're clearly not going to be the champion. But, I guess it's just one of those things that you have to say it. So, whatever.
If you watch the VOD, though, so first of all, in Lockport, apparently it was very hot that day. So it was kind of like the Evolve 68 show that I was at where the heat really influenced everything. Like guys climbing the ropes even. There was a spot where I feel like Jay Briscoe was going to climb the rope and his boots were slipping too much and he was like, yeah, like whispered to Mark who was able to get a better Jeez. Footing on it. So during that event, you had Jay Lethal against Silas Young and Lethal ends up beating Young earlier on in the night. Really, it was weird because it was the third match of the night. But then they announced that, both of them would be in the Honor Rumble. And then Silas and Lethal were actually number one and number two.
Yes.
And they lasted the entire time. They were the last. They were the first two in, the last two out, or the last two in the ring. So it was. I thought they did. They did a good job of telling the story that, like, look, even though Silas Young just lost to Lethal, now he just, he had a great match, and now he wins the Honor Rumble, has a number one contender, and. After the show, it actually felt like a dark match type thing, but they had it on the VOD. Cole, it was on commentary during the Honor Rumble, and at the end, Silas had adhered to the code of honor with Lethal after he lost. So then, when he wins the Honor Rumble, he goes, "Come on, Lethal. I was a real man, and I shook your hand when I lost. Come in here and shake my hand." So Lethal's kind of injured. He gets himself up, goes in the ring. He puts his hand out. And then Young just kind of like laughs at him and pulls his hand back and walks out of the ring. So Cole comes off commentary, and he kind of goes into Jay Lethal, making fun of him and everything. So Lethal challenges him to a match. And he's like, "I'm not going to do that in front of these fans here in Lockport. Are you serious? That's a pay-per-view quality match. I'm not going to do that here." But then Lethal, which I thought was a little insulting, goes, "Oh, I thought you were the men's champion, not the women's champion." A, Ring of Honor doesn't have a women's title. B, come on, let's not poop on the Women of Honor like that. But anyway, so that, Cole, flew off the handle, ran the ring. They rang the bell. So it wasn't for the title, but they had a match, and Lethal ends up rolling him up with an inside cradle to win. So then you kind of had this story that, Silas looked stronger than Lethal at the end of the Honor Rumble. Lethal beats Cole. So, if you want to go by that weird kind of logic, Silas has a chance against Cole in Lakeland. And I thought that was a really effective way of kind of building him up.
Yeah, and I mean, it's Wrestling 101. Like, Silas Young is one of their better heels in Ring of Honor. Like, nobody cheers for him. He's just, he's always going to get booed, so putting him in main events or big spots on the house show where, you need the baby faces to get that reaction it just makes sense,
100% agreed. Then you had the six-man tag team tournament round one match. Jay White with Kushida and Super ACH versus the Briscoes and Toro Yano.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we looked at this one way, like, oh, why would these guys lose? And then it kind of worked out the other way, like, why would they win when they have everything already going for them? So that was fine. You know, it was an okay match. I didn't really care about it. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually happy to see White, Kushida, and ACH move on. I don't like Yano. And it's weird because I like Cabana's comedy. I like Castle's comedy. I just don't like Toru Yano's comedy. Maybe it's because it always follows the same exact pattern. You know, it doesn't really veer off. It's always, I'm going to take the turnbuckle off. And in Ring of Honor, it's like, oh, I forgot I can't get it off. I need scissors.
It's just, like, stupid comedy. Like, that's why. Like, I don't like the low blows and taking off the... It's just, you know, like, Cabana and Castle are entertaining as hell. You know, Yano does not entertain me.
Very much agreed. So the next match, I think this kind of bucks your trend of predictable stuff. And I was very happy to pull for this man. You had Jay Lethal versus Naito. And Jay Lethal came out on top on this one.
See, and this was another short sight on my part, because they're going to fight for the IC title in New Japan. So I should have known that, you know, Lethal was going to find a way to get that win. He didn't beat him, like, decisively, you know. He got him with the roll-up, right? So, perfect. Perfectly fine, you know. It builds their feud. It keeps them going. It gives them a reason to fight. So, I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
and not to mention, I mean, it was a good match.
Oh, yeah. Although part of me felt like Naito didn't pull out all the stops.
Here we go.
I'm not the only one. I've read in other places that it was a good match, but it seemed that, you know, it wasn't the best they could have had.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's partly because this is the beginning of their feud, you know? Like, they're going to have more singles matches and bigger singles matches. So you don't put everything out there the first time, you know, let it build.
Yeah, no, totally. Actually, Lethal did actually win with a Lethal Injection. So it was a little.
Oh, okay, yes.
Okay, then we had the world title match. You had Michael Elgin challenging Adam Cole, the current Ring of Honor heavyweight champion, for the Ring of Honor title.
Yeah, and like, you know, we missed this element last week, but like, you know, they feuded for the first, when they were the champion the first time in Ring of Honor, they feuded over the belt. I think Adam Cole actually took it from Elgin.
It was the other way around. Elgin, the first time Cole won it,
because Cole took it from Steen, and then, or whatever the case. Yeah. So, you know, that was cool. Adam Cole getting his revenge. Another match I didn't really care about because Elgin was not winning. So I knew it was going to be a good match. I knew what it was going to be. I've seen them work countless times. So I knew what it was going to be, and I kind of checked out on this one.
See, last week you and Mikio talked about how Elgin's knee had been hurt, and that's how he ended up losing the Intercontinental Championship to Naito, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up continuing this storyline of his knee being hurt. My only problem with that is your earlier singles title match centered around the idea that somebody's knee was or leg was injured during the match, and that stopped them from being able to pull off their moves and impacted the loss. And, you know, clearly it's a good way to make a guy look strong and just be like, okay, on this night he got a little injured and couldn't, you know, overcome it to win the match. But to do it, if you're going to have Elgin work that angle, and obviously New Japan probably wants him to do that, right? So that, you know, there's a continuity in the storyline. Why do it with Dijak and Fish earlier in the night? It's a repetitive story that you have now.
Well, I mean, like, the Dijak and Fish was just kind of in the moment, and Elgin was like a lingering thing. So, you know, I don't mind that. It was like Fish was doing it to even the odds, and Cole was doing it to exploit you know, the baby faces injury. So two different, you know, mentalities or psychologies going in there. But I don't mind it because it's real life. Like, if you watch UFC, like, you know, everyone's going for the same rear naked choke or whatever the case.
Okay,
so, like,
okay.
you're the guy is bigger than you. You're working it. And I didn't feel like it was overkill. You know, I felt like it was two separate things, and it didn't ruin anything for me.
Okay. When you put it that way, it makes me feel better about it because my gut reaction was, this is too similar and it irritates me. Great, you know, good match between the two. As I've said before, Elgin going to New Japan and coming back kind of reinvigorated him in my eyes, and I think a lot of the Ring of Honor fans' eyes. So it was fun to see him there. Like you said, the idea that he had beaten Cole for the belt last time, so there's that kind of backstory there with Cole being able to come out victorious and even the odds there. So, you know, and it also sets up the fact that, you know, maybe one day the two of them will have a third match kind of in a decisive manner for the title.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, these are two young guys, and maybe their third and decisive match will be for the NXT title or something like that. But because I can see them both ending up there at some point in the near future. But, you know, I don't know if it happens again in Ring of Honor, because at the end of the year, I think it might be the end of Adam Cole. But, you know, whatever. I enjoy it while it lasts, and I'm sure we'll see it maybe in New Japan or some type of tag, something like that.
I don't even like to think about things like that, as I'd be very sad to see these men, to see Cole leave Ring of Honor. And then that leaves us with Ladder Wars 6. Now, I think that we've been to one of them, or maybe two. I'm not sure. I can't quite put my finger on it. We definitely saw Steen versus Generico. Did we see them? But they had a tag match also.
No, I know we definitely saw Steen and Generico versus the American Wolves.
Okay. All right, so maybe we didn't see the... I just kind of, like, implant memories into my head, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure if we were there for that or not.
I have...
One of them was in Canada, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't go to Canada.
No, I'm certainly not.
Unless it's by accident when I go to WrestleMania 23 and accidentally book a hotel in Ontario. But now, I don't think I'm exaggerating, and I'm trying to kind of comb my memory banks. This might be, for me, the craziest TLC ladder match I've ever seen, with some of the things that these guys were doing.
See, I wouldn't go that far. Like, the tables
barricade?
Exploding and that kind of stuff. Yeah, but, like, people have done the barricade, and, like, it was just a super kick, and he fell backwards into it. It wasn't, like, a crazy power bomb or something, which, thank God, because I was worried about that spike the whole entire time.
Oh,
and, you know, this is, I said this to you, you know, Saturday night or Sunday morning, like, I, the entire time I was sitting here watching it live, I was nervous. Like, from right away when the Bucks had Christopher Daniels on the apron, and the way I saw the ladder hit him, I was like, oh shit, like, that busted him open. And whether it actually did or he cut himself, whatever, he was busted open. He was bleeding the rest of the match. And, like, you know, they're trying to go all out and all of that stuff. And the table's exploding and, like, leaving these gigantic shards everywhere. It's like, yo, somebody's going to get hurt. And I don't want to see it. So once it was over, and then I could watch it again, and I was like, phew, everyone survives. No one gets hurt too bad. I know I can just sit back and enjoy it. I really did. And, you know, I thought the Bucks were going to get the win. I throughout the match, I didn't really question it. You know, towards the end, when Tamagotchi came out, I was like, oh, God. But then once Jay White came out and he threw him through the table, I was like, okay, cool. Now everything is back to even, and I don't think they have the odds. So it's kind of weird that the one group who cheats all the time is the only ones who, like, didn't have somebody out there helping them. But, you know, I loved it. Crazy match, four tables in a row, and Nick getting thrown off the ladder. There was a lot of just crazy spots and you know, go out of your way and watch it if you didn't.
I thought, and you know, it was weird for me, and I wrote this up over at PW Ponderings, was normally when a guy, so Nick Jackson climbs the ladder, he's literally about to grab the belts. And then he looks and sees that Matt has Kazarian set up for the five-star Meltzer driver. And there's a table across from the second rope to the ladder. So he's got it set, you know, Matt's got it set up. And Nick goes to grab the titles and goes, no, wait a minute. Anytime I've seen a guy in a position to win, like at the top of a steel cage or at the top of a ladder, and they choose to go do one more move instead of just winning the match, they lose. Like, every time.
So, for me, the whole thing was like, okay, he backdropped Daniels, right? So Daniels was gone. And then when he went to do that, I was like, okay, well, he's going to kill Kaz, and then that's it. Like, there's nobody else to stop him. So, it didn't... It went through my head for like a second, and then I was immediately just like, no, but there's, that's it. Like, if he does that, he kills them, and that's it. They win. Like, you know, that was like the end to me. That was, all right, this is it. They win. Done.
And it was crazy because last week I said that Daniel's promo is what won me over and made me think the Addiction were gonna win. And then they didn't. So I was actually that much more surprised by the ending and that much more entertained. Because, I mean, that promo was so money that I should have seen through it. I should have been like, wow, this promo is so serious that this is like his, you know, goodbye to the title, and he's going to put on a sick match.
Yeah, that's, you know, you guys talked about it last week, and I hadn't seen it. And then I went to watch it, and at first I was like, oh, man, like, you know, that was a really amazing promo. But it didn't really give me that vibe of like, oh, well, that they're definitely keeping it. It kind of gave me what you just said, that like, oh, well, this is like they're going to snap when they lose, and this is everything to them, and, you know, it's going to mean so much more when they lose this. So, you know, it worked out. They told a good story in there, which is not – it doesn't often happen with ladder matches and stuff like that. You know, Daniels kept hammering home, this is everything, and so it worked out.
Yeah, so overall, would you say you recommend the show?
Yeah, I mean, sure.
All right. I definitely recommend the show. I don't know. I've
just to watch the ladder war, I mean.
Yeah, know, if there's only one match you watch. But, I mean, the Kamitachi-Tamagotchi-Dragon Lee match I thought was really great. So, you know, there are a couple of gems on that card.
And yeah, I mean, the whole show top to bottom was really good overall.
You know, and if I want to, like, just come kind of think about, you know, not every WWE pay-per-view, obviously they have a lot more, you know, but not every WWE pay-per-view is, like, you know, a home run. You know, there's just, sometimes it's, you know, it's just good. And I think that while this wasn't the most amazing event, I think it was really good. And I think what it does is it does that, it helps their build toward Final Battle, which is... You know, hopefully that one doesn't disappoint.
Yes, the only difference is WWE has two pay-per-views and all this TV every month, so they can afford to have a build-up pay-per-view, whereas Ring of Honor, if you have one pay-per-view every 2 or 3 months, and this is like your big shows, you can't afford to have just another episode of ROH TV or, you know, these good matches that don't really go anywhere. You need more.
Agreed. So, speaking of WWE, we are taping this on Tuesday before SmackDown, just as a heads up. But we're going to go into our Raw review and then do some predictions for No Mercy.
And just quickly before we get into that, TNA also had Bound for Glory on Sunday. And it was a decent pay-per-view. You know, Lashley versus EC3, Damian Sandow versus Eddie Edwards. The Great War with the Hardys and the Decay was just, I mean, it was fantastic. It was exactly, you know, like they left the ringside for a minute and like you went to like pre-tape stuff where they were doing all crazy things and chasing each other around. So, you know, it worked out. It was exactly what you would expect and it was great.
All right, I didn't get a chance to watch it, but, you know, it seemed, from what I've read of the results, it sounds like it was a pretty good show. What was how was Cody on the show?
Barely. Like he, Mike Bennett, after Maria lost, Mike Bennett came out and was like, "Oh, I'm holding the show hostage. Forget it." And then Cody and Cody and Brandi Rhodes, because they can't say Cody Rhodes, came out, and so, you know, they brawled with Maria and Mike, and then they just powdered and left.
Wow. All right.
So he didn't. I was expecting him to cut some type of promo. I was expecting Billy Corgan to come out and say, "I bought TNA." We got nothing. So that was, you know, just a little disappointing. But, you know, it was a good show, and it. I liked where they went with the company. So hopefully, these things are under control, and Billy Corgan or someone, you know, makes a move, because they're taping all their TV through December this week. So that's kind of crazy. We already got a world title change there. I won't spoil that if anyone wants to read it. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Does Cody Rhodes win the title tonight? And, like, you know, do we get it in 3 months from now? Who knows? So we'll see.
All right. So actually, just before, do we want to spoil the bet? Spoil the... What you're pushed
with? Yeah, sure,
with.
Go ahead.
Okay, so before we get into WWE, we did make a wager during for the last pay-per-view that Runs thought that Kendrick was going to beat TJ Perkins for the Cruiserweight Championship.
I was just a week late because he won yesterday, but that's okay.
But he didn't win the title.
I know. Even though they announced it was for the title.
Which is weird. So, if
it was for the title last night and Kendrick won, like, I was going to protest this thing. No, I was right. Look, even though I still think he's going to win at the next pay-per-view. Anyway, continue.
All right, so the terms of the bet were the loser would have to wear a shirt from WWE.com of the winner's choosing. So, although I really thought that I'm not your usual girl with Nia Jax was a good choice, and also in the top running was I've Got Kids, and on the back of the shirt, I Need This Job, which would have been great for you to have to wear to work, I decided to go with a fan favorite, somebody that you might be a fan of but just not want to wear this shirt. So you get this fantastic Bailey. Can I get a hug shirt, which you get to wear around the building, whether you're wearing a professional development day?
Can you slide it up a little bit there? Can I get a hug? Oh, my God.
It's black, so I thought that I was being nice there because it's not too crazy. And it's one of those shirts that you kind of have to, you know, if somebody wants to read the whole thing, they might need to, like, you know, you might need to straighten it out so you can get away with not.
It's a good thing that, like, it's winter, so I could wear a sweatshirt when I leave the building, because, oh, my God.
Oh, wearing it home would be, yeah.
I can't, like, wearing it outside. Like, that's just terrible. I'll be able to explain it, I guess, in work, but oof.
So excited.
When I have people just coming up to me and hugging me, which is probably the worst thing in the world.
That's Statwife and I really felt that was the that was the way to go.
I last week I said I had a feeling, and I thought that maybe you bought the R-Truth and Goldust stepbrothers painting shirt, because that would just be like absurd to, like, what the hell are you wearing?
So actually that helps us transition well, because what the hell were they thinking last night on Raw? Because we're not going to talk about this unless I bring it up now. Why did R-Truth and Goldust have a sing-along, bouncy Goldust head going along their lyrics?
Well, haven't they had that for a while? Like, I thought they've had that since they changed the lyrics up.
Maybe I take pride in knowing the R-Truth lyrics.
It's just for you. He changed the words, so now it's for you to get used to.
I guess.
You know, it's funny because I thought about the shirt, and that's the only reason why I thought about them. And I was like, wait a minute, wasn't that a thing? Like, weren't they trying to make this a little tag team, and now they're just gone? But, yep, there they were, and thankfully they lost to the Club. Which, you know, we have squash matches. I guess we had one later on with Sheamus and Cesaro, but we have squash matches for everyone. Like, why aren't the club getting a squash match? You know, that's... squash matches, we don't need to see them every week for Braun Strowman anymore. But if they're going to use them how they did for Bayley last week, when, like, all right, she lost two matches in a row, let's give her... That's genius. Yeah. That's exactly what you need to do, you know? So that's perfectly fine. And I guess R-Truth and Goldust are a squash match at this point, but, you know, whatever. It was good to see the club get a win, have a little mean streak, and they said they weren't done coming after the titles, but, like, what the hell? I don't want to see them unless they're going to win.
Yeah, it was just weird how I felt the announce team was talking about how, like, they, you know, these guys are dominant or things like that, and I was like, well...
Yeah, in Japan.
Yeah, like, have you guys not been watching the same product that we've been watching the last couple of weeks?
Like, this is how you should have been selling them when they first showed up. Not, like, you know, not 3 months after we've been seeing them lose.
All right, so kind of jumping around, you had Lana come out and ask for a rematch for Roman Reigns. And then they ended up agreeing to a... Well, there's going to be a Hell in a Cell match now at... at Hell in a Cell, between Roman and Rusev. What'd you think?
I enjoyed the segment. I thought it was effective. You know, I liked Roman Reigns coming out through the stage after he went through the crowd. I thought that was cool. But yeah. You know, it was a nice touch, and I liked the all right. If I'm going to Hell, then you're coming with me. It makes sense for the Hell in a Cell pay per view. I wonder if maybe Rusev gets his belt back, but I don't think so.
Yeah, me neither. That's why I'm kind of. Although
I like the family thing yesterday too. Like, you know, no one has ever held this title. I thought that was a nice touch.
Mm-hmm. And that, I did like Lana's retort where she was like, "Family, you talk about family, but you know you're attacking my family." And I thought that was I was like, "Hey, yeah, Roman, what the hell?"
She said something else too, where she was just like, "Yeah, yeah, whatever," and like just like brushed him off, and I was dying.
So, you know, my only thing with this is I'm not the biggest fan of Reigns, so sometimes I'm just not as interested in the whole thing. That's all.
See, but I'm not the biggest fan of Reigns, but I enjoy watching him wrestle, and I love him and Rusev as a pairing. Like, I think I could watch them fight till WrestleMania. Like, that. It's two big guys going at it. They make sense. They have a lot. They have good chemistry in the ring, so I enjoy this feud.
I agree. So then you had Brian Kendrick with TJ Perkins, a non-title match. I thought it was a little odd to have this match so quickly. I felt like you could have had TJP versus somebody else, and then Kendrick beat somebody and then say, "I deserve another," you know? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I like their, like, oh, if Brian Kendrick is the number one contender. Like, of course, no one else has interacted with TJP since he became the champion. So, you know, I still... I'm still not sure what their feeling is on TJP, if he's just he won the tournament, so now he's the champion, and he's going to lose it to Kendrick soon. But I don't know. I like the entrance. I like his video game stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, that works, but I don't know how behind him they are.
Are they selling that like Mega Man TJP shirt already? Because
I don't think so.
I saw someone wearing it, so maybe they just took the logo and made it on one of those
sites.
He might,
he might, you know, have been selling that.
Because it's so cool.
Nah, I do like that. But speaking of so cool and mega, I think they are, like, I think Tony Nese earned his spot in WWE last week. And it's kind of cool... because he was a last-minute addition to the Cruiserweight Classic. You know, we were at his Evolve match when he won his way in. And he, you know, he was out early in the Cruiserweight. Now he got a chance, and, like, he looks like a WWE wrestler. He's a jacked-up freak of an athlete. He's a premier athlete, you know, and all that. But last week, he killed it in the match with TJP. And, you know, he got another match this week. He got a win. I think they really like him.
Yeah, I thought he did a good job of, you know, his character is that he's kind of like a dick and he just doesn't like other people. I kind of enjoy that. I thought the comment that Rich Swann is like a second-rate Amber Rose was kind of like ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and they need to make sure that he continues things like that. You know, I think that.
Yeah. I like those little screen interviews, you know, for the Cruiserweights.
Oh, those screen interviews, I mean, they take me back to Saturday and Sunday morning. So I love those things. And I just feel like they need to continue to make sure that Nice doesn't just become like a different looking Neville. You know?
It's I don't know, like when, you know, it's funny when you said that, like I've never really thought about them in the same light. Like Neville, they look similar, like with their jacked up, you know, yeah, and their ability to fly, but Neville is still more of that high flyer for me, and Nice shows a little more power and okay, aggression, so I like that.
True. I'll quickly mention, Braun Strowman defeated another jobber. They're like, and they basically ask him, what are you going to do next?
Yeah, I like that, when he was like, you know, give me some real competition or I'm just going to destroy this show. I thought that was good. He needs some competition. The crowd kind of popped for it, so yeah. I don't know if they're going to run with that or just kind of leave him where he is, but hey, man, yeah, I like it. I'm enjoying Strowman.
And then you had Sami Zayn beat Titus O'Neil, and what, if you were fast-forwarding, like I was with 4, as you know, I'm a little crazy. I like to live on the edge. So I was fast-forwarding with 4 times speed, and
Did you miss the Titus is everything and everything is Titus?
I mean, I went back, you know, but like, yeah, I was, because I was like, this is it.
I actually thought Sami Zayn was gonna lose, and I was getting like so, like I was typing out texts sent to you, and but you know, I'm happy to see that he won, and we didn't do anything drastically stupid here.
I don't want to talk about this too long because we need to get to our predictions so I can get out of here. But what did you think about Enzo and Cass doing the breast cancer thing? I mean, it's so, I don't know.
It's so stupid. Like, okay, first of all, I don't know if you know about Susan G. Komen, but like apparently they steal their charitable money. Like, so that's terrible.
Shady things about them, yeah.
Yeah, so like that's terrible in the first place. And then like it's just such an awkward position. Like, at the end when Cass was like, "Let me just tell you one word that does not describe these women. Let me repeat, does not describe." So what why do you need? You don't need to spell that out, Vince. Like, you don't need to tell them, like, make sure you go out there and get your stuff across. Like, no, this was not the moment for that.
Or the worst was, I don't know, what do we got here? A couple winners? A couple winners? It doesn't even sound.
And then
he
snatched the tablecloth, yeah, and like the belts were just wrapped up.
It doesn't even sound like saying a couple winners, like, doesn't sound right. Like,
nah, that was just, we need something for Enzo and Cass to do. Oh, okay, we have this segment that Cena or someone usually does.
What do you think? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the Jericho Owens and New Day. You know, that was just phenomenal. That back and forth was really good. The whole, you know what, Woods? You're on the list. I love that. You know, it's hilarious. The That 70s Show stuff with Kutcher and Masterson was good. I enjoyed them on commentary for the match.
Yeah, they were good, actually.
So, you know, they were entertaining. They were somewhat knowledgeable about the product, so that was cool. I mean, I'm not sure that WWE, like, reached out to them and was like, hey, you want to post this video and come to Raw? I kind of feel like that just happened. You know, like, yeah, they watched it, they saw it, and they were like, hey, fuck that. We're going to say this. And then it just worked out.
Just waiting for the time that one of the wrestlers calls us out, and then we can show up. I thought it was really good. Do you actually think that Jericho will really challenge for these titles?
No. I think that was just a one-time thing. But I don't know, because they got the win, so now they can, right? Oh, no, they lost.
They lost, yeah.
Yeah, so they lost, so I don't think that's really going to go anywhere. I think that was just, you know, for this episode of Raw, like, oh, we don't have a main event, Rollins is still banged up, or whatever the case, but I enjoyed the hell out of it, and it was a good use of everyone involved.
I'm in complete agreement. So then, last thing we'll mention quickly before the main event, you got Cesaro and Sheamus. You know, the battling partners, we don't like each other. My favorite part about it was when Cesaro threw the suitcase out of the car, and Sheamus is like, "You cheeky bastard."
But I want, and they better give me, an episode of Ride Along. Just put them in a car, driving to the next town, and film it. What the hell?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's just let them be angry and play their characters the whole time. I think that would be entertaining as anything.
But at the same time, I'm going to say that I disagree with you on that, and they should just do a clip on Raw of them being angry in the car, because the whole thing with Ride Along is it's supposed to be like a peek behind the curtain. It's, you know, people being real.
So it's a peek behind the curtain of two guys who don't like each other and are being forced to team.
Yeah, but they're probably bros. And, you know, then it's, to me, it sullies the, okay, it sullies the name of Ride Along.
On the last episode of Ride Along, it was Charlotte and Ric Flair, and at one point they didn't talk for 25 minutes. And then it was Saxton, Cole, and JBL, and they left Byron Saxton at a road stop, and they just shit on him the entire time. So, like, I would love to see it, because that ride-along was complete kayfabe. JBL and Michael Cole were, like, total assholes, shitting all over Byron Saxton, like, just making fun of him living at home and, like, waving a cowbell in his ear and then leaving him at the rest stop. Like, come on, that, you know. And then Byron's walking around like, have you seen Michael Cole and JBL?
I'm not going to lie to you. I believe that JBL and Michael Cole are really like that. I haven't watched the episode, but I don't know.
That part wouldn't shock me. But, like, they were, like, screaming at him to pay the toll. And, like, it was, you could just tell it was, at times, like, a little too turned up. But I would love Sheamus and Cesaro arguing the whole time. No, go here. No, make this turn. Oh, let me drive. And just, you know, that would be hilarious. Arguing over the radio, arguing, whatever.
All right, all right. And then we got the main event, which was Sasha challenging
Charlotte
for the women's title. Well, and what's weird is I'm being a little nitpicky, but my wife and stat wife looked at me like, calm down. But it's, I don't like that they call it the Raw Women's Champion, in that it was not the Raw Women's Championship. It was the Women's Championship, and SmackDown is the SmackDown Women's Championship. I know it's like a little, I'm pulling at hairs, but I think there is something to be said that the Women's Championship kind of has that, more of that attachment to the lineage of the proper women's title, where the SmackDown was like newly created. So I just don't
know. Yeah,
like,
but they have that for everything. It's the Raw Tag Team, the SmackDown Tag. They just,
you know,
are clarifying on both shows.
I'm just being a little bit of a, you know,
stickler.
Yes. All right, so,
yeah, I mean, I love that they were in the main event. I love that, you know, they got a good amount of time. I like Bayley taking out Dana in the back. Once that happened, I wasn't sure where they were going. You know, is Charlotte going to win on her own, or is she going to lose because no one's with her? But being the main event, I kind of felt like this was going to be another Sasha moment, and we're going to have that. So, hey, if they took the title off her because she was hurt and now she's healthy and they know she's healthy, I'm perfectly okay with, like, all right, well, let's kind of redo this, you know?
But, okay, so then what happens in 2 weeks? A rematch? Considering how often...
Yeah, why not a Hell in a Cell?
Okay. If that's what this leads to, then I'm fine. If this leads to just a regular rematch between these two women, then I feel like you should have saved the win for the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think that would be a little bit dumb if they just do another regular match, because this feud has been building for 3 or 4 months.
But
so, you know, I think this is one feud that you can use that Hell in a Cell and effectively, and, you know, they were the main event, and so you're pushing the women more and more into that spotlight.
Am I wrong here in saying that so I would have been happier if Charlotte takes the belt and gets counted out. And then
the main event of Raw.
I know that sounds, but listen, there's a count out, right? Somehow there's a count out, maybe even a double count out, whatever. I want the match to end like that, and then the next week Sasha's like, you know what? I want to make sure that you can't get out of this again, and that nobody gets involved. Let's do a Hell in a Cell.
Well, you know, maybe we go that way with Charlotte saying the rematch, or you know, I want my rematch, and all right, fine, but no one's going to be able to help you, and we go like that. But
okay,
you know,
okay,
if the men go to a no finish in the Raw main event, it's a problem. So like, for the women to be the first main event in, you know, 12 years and the second one ever, like, that would have just ruined it if they just did a no DQ or something like that.
Wait, did Sasha not win it in the main event last time?
No, that was just the match. Okay. The last main event was Trish and Lita. So,
all right. So that was Raw. So let's head into the predictions for No Mercy, and then we'll call it a day. All right. Right now announced, we have. I'll start from the bottom. Well, this is how they have it on the website: SmackDown Women's Champion Becky Lynch versus Alexa Bliss.
Yeah, I don't think Alexa gets the win here, but I think this will be a good match. This will be a cool spot for her to earn her spot, and you know, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I think I think that she's just the first defense for Becky, you know, on a major pay-per-view, and I don't see how the title changes here, but I think she has a real opportunity to continue to kind of show what she's got, basically.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then we have the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, Heath Slater and Rhino versus the Usos. I don't see how. I felt like this is what we were building to, you know, allow Heath Slater and Rhino to be the weird tag team that gets the distinction of being the first SmackDown Tag Team Champions ever. But in the end, the Usos were going to take the titles off of them. And if they don't pull the trigger here, I don't know what their plan is.
No, yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you there. This is the Usos have been fantastic since turning, and this whole storyline I've really enjoyed. So I'm looking forward to the Usos winning and then Alpha challenging and going from there. Heath Slater and Rhino have been great. They've been entertaining. So, you know, whether Rhino has to leave for the campaign trail soon or whatever, whether they're still a tag team, you know, that's fun.
I completely forget sometimes that's a legitimate issue. Right? Like, oh, guys, I gotta go campaign. Gore! Like, it's just so weird. His campaign should just be like some guy dresses up as his opponent and he gores him. Or, like, or there's a criminal going to rob someone and then, like, he gores him and he's like, Rhino's tough on crime.
Yeah. Rhino gores the criminals.
All right, sorry. IC title match, Miz versus Dolph Ziggler.
IC title versus career.
Yep, Ziggler loses. He must retire. He can't go to SmackDown. He can't go to Raw. You know, he could go to TNA, I guess.
And, you know, we discussed this a little bit off air. Like, I don't think there's any way Dolph Ziggler loses this match. You know, if he's really leaving, then I don't think you end his career on WWE and then you allow him to go somewhere else and play off of that. So I think they would just kind of write him off or have him disappear like they did with Ryback or Barrett or any of those guys. So I don't know. You know, if he loses, I'll be stunned. But I've loved this promo, this program. The promo that they had last week on SmackDown was awesome. So I'm really looking forward to it. They definitely built some intrigue either way with the career on the line. So it'll be good.
Yeah, I guess it was weird because I know that Ziggler's doing other things. So like, there's a part of me that was like, maybe he'll lose and go and do his stand up and not wrestle for a while. But I guess through talking through our conversation, it made me realize that you're probably right, and he's not going to go out that way. So look for Ziggler to win here, hold the IC title, and hopefully has he had a run with the IC title before? He has, right?
Or am I... Dolph Ziggler?
Yeah.
Yes, like probably four or five.
Okay, I figure. So I just wanted to say was I hope that this one means something.
I think it has to because The Miz has done a great job of reestablishing it, and for Dolph to have this whole program and have to put his career on the line and all of that, I think we're heading towards a good run.
Agreed. And then we have Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt.
Enjoy.
I don't care. I guess Bray Wyatt wins? I don't know. Bray Wyatt wins. I don't care.
Is Bray Wyatt going to win? Like, that's the problem.
I'm going to say Halloween's coming, so yes.
I hope so, because if they do this whole thing just for him to lose two or three times to Randy Orton, it's like, come on, what the hell?
Follow the meaningless match.
Yeah, that's another part, is I don't really care about this match, so.
All right, we're in agreement.
Good luck.
So, moving on, last match. We have a triple threat match for the world title, AJ Styles versus Dean Ambrose versus John Cena.
Yeah, I mean, this is another one where they've done a amazing job of building up and telling the interweaving stories and having Ambrose and Cena have a beef. And, you know, they've just done a great job building this up. So I'm really looking forward to this. But I don't think AJ loses, but would it shock me if Cena wins and breaks the record? And, like, no, it wouldn't. But, man, it would kill me.
Yeah,
it would destroy all of the goodwill that they've built up with Cena.
Cena can't break the... If he's going to break it, I don't want it to be at No Mercy.
It's not going
to
be at No Mercy, you don't think?
You know, it would be... It would be ridiculous. It would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, but I think you can keep it so that maybe Cena wins it, you know, at WrestleMania, you know,
I would love to see Cena, like, win the Rumble and then lose the main event, or, like, finish runner-up in the Royal Rumble, like, something like that, where, like, every time he just can't quite get over that hump.
No, that would be really
I think that's a cool story to tell.
So, it's weird, because I think that even though... I think the match is predictable in that I don't think that AJ is going to lose it. I'm still
like
very
there's
excited.
There's always that doubt in your head, yeah.
I'm still excited to see it, so, you know.
Yeah. Completely agree, man. SmackDown has been better than Raw since the draft, and that's saying something.
And 1 hour less.
Yeah.
That's why I actually watch all of SmackDown every week, and I fast forward through a good amount of Raw.
What the? I'm watching WCW Mayhem, and somebody was just holding a Canadian flag over the barricade, and Dean Malenko, like, backed into it, turned around and, like, slapped the flag, and then the guy used the flagpole to push Dean Malenko back. And I don't know what just happened.
Look, let's not... we only have a couple of minutes left. We don't need to analyze WCW, because that... No. All right. So just want to kind of give you guys throw a little plug out there. This weekend, one of the reasons we're taping early is because I'm going to New York City Comic Con all 4 days, because that's the kind of thing I do. While you guys are there, you should check out the a stand number 775. It's Headlocked. It's a comic book that is about wrestling. And actually, Jerry Lawler is the artist for every front cover for this. So we're going to actually get a word in edgewise with the creators this weekend, and hopefully also get a word in with Mr. Lawler. And we'll have that on the podcast up for you guys next week, so keep an eye out. If you're in the New York City area, make sure you stop by the booth. You're going to Comic-Con. It's number 775, Headlocked. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're here with Mike, the creator and writer of Headlocked, a wrestling comic book. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Hey, man, thanks for having me.
So where'd you come up with the idea to create a wrestling comic book? I know that some of the background is that you didn't want to just create something that, you know, like in former works that have come out featuring wrestlers have been kind of unrealistic.
Yeah, you know, I was a wrestling fan, a comic book fan my whole life. And every time a wrestling comic would come out, I would go to the store, I would buy them. I would be invariably disappointed. You know, Undertaker fighting demons, Kevin Nash's Blade Runner, or not Blade Runner, as Mad Max, Ultimate Warrior stripping Santa Claus naked, like, all that stuff. It wasn't what interests me as a fan, you know? Like, I like wrestling, I want to watch wrestlers, I don't, you know, if I wanted to watch, you know, Undertaker, if I wanted to watch Mad Max, I'd watch Mad Max. I don't need to see Kevin Nash's Mad Max. So, you know, it just, over the time, it occurred to me that no one was ever going to make the wrestling comic that I wanted to read. So I just created my own. We came up with the idea of Headlocked. And then one of the other sort of aspects of it is, you know, if you're a wrestling fan, you have to defend it to 50% of the people that you know.
Of course.
You know, everybody either gets it or they don't. So one of the things I thought I would try to do with the book is sort of let people who maybe aren't wrestling fans see wrestling through my eyes. and see it for, you know, an art form. So, you know, we told the story of a kid who's a theater major in college. He quits school, you know, and wants to become a wrestler because he falls in love with wrestling kind of unexpectedly. And it's his journey through the business, you know, so we're examining the craft of wrestling as he learns it through the eyes of a performance artist, but at the same time, sort of navigating like the seedy underbelly of the business, which provides some of the, you know, drives the story forward. So it's got sort of cable drama elements to it, but it's accessible enough that anybody can understand it. And then the other, to sort of hammer our theme home, is wrestling as art. All the art in the book is done by wrestlers. So Jerry the King Lawler paints the covers, and then the interiors are done by Mikel Malapola, who's a Samoan wrestler from New Zealand. And I think it's really cool what we've been able to build from starting from just nothing.
What was it like being able to contact the wrestlers and actually get them on with the project?
It's really unbelievable. I mean, I just wanted to write a wrestling comic, and I mean, I'm at a booth this weekend with Ric Flair, Jerry Lawler, Christian, you know, Joey Styles, and, you know, Mick Foley. So it's, you know, as a lifelong wrestling fan, most of this is just, you know, I have to pinch myself sometimes that, you know, I'm in scenarios with people that I grew up admiring, and, you know, having a drink with, you know, Ric Flair or something like that is just super surreal. And the wrestling business has been very good to me. I know people, you know, people have a hard time with it sometimes, and they give it people crap on it or whatever, but the wrestling business has been amazing to me. All these guys they like what I'm doing. You know, a lot of them just discovered me at Comic Cons that they were attending as fans, and they were like, hey, what can I do to help? And, you know, so, I mean, now I'm at a point where, you know, AJ Styles is WWE champion, and he's written a story for my book, and Rob Van Dam, and, you know, I've had like 4 Hall of Famers do things for my book, and, you know, I always feel super blessed and to be where I'm at and to have the success that we've had. You know, we got a long way to go still, obviously. I mean, there's still a lot of people who have no idea that we exist, you know. We sort of don't exist in comics, and we don't exist in wrestling. We're sort of in this sweet spot in between, but, you know, I don't use Diamond. I do everything myself through Kickstarter and whatnot, because comics is such a superhero-centric business. So we sort of don't exist in comics, but then, you know, we're not doing a WWE-branded thing, so we sort of don't exist in wrestling either. So it's this weird spot that we occupy, but it's gone really good, and I think the name is starting to get out there, you know, largely due to things like Comic-Con and stuff like that. I know last year at San Diego, we had the Young Bucks Finn Balor and Kevin Steen and myself, we all took a picture together that ended up being, you know, making its rounds on the dirt sheet. And, you know, when CM Punk walked out on WWE with the belt and they did that whole angle, he showed up to crash the WWE panel, and then he came to my booth and then he left. So, like, he, you know, like, that sort of stuff builds, you know, the name. It, you know, it starts to develop some sort of, you know, awareness, and it really just helps us. And that's how we've been able to sort of build what we've been able to build. And I don't know, it's really a dream come true.
How many people would you say that have read the comic book that aren't wrestling fans have been a little bit turned on to the product because of what you guys brought them?
The one thing I think, I've definitely got people from comics. You know, the line I always tell people is, you don't watch boxing, but you can enjoy Rocky. And that's kind of how I feel about Headlocked. Where, you know, sometimes the term wrestling comic can be sort of off-putting, I guess, but it's a drama. And like I said, it's accessible to everybody. But yeah, there's been a lot of people who've been like, oh, I never really thought about wrestling that way before. And, you know, sometimes it's just something you see a million times and you don't necessarily think of it a certain way, and then it just clicks. And we're hoping to do that. The thing that I think I'm most proud about is that I am a ton of people's first comic book. You know, a lot of times when people come into, you know, if you go into a comic store for the first time, you're looking for Superman, Spider-Man, you're looking for characters. It's not a creator that necessarily draws people. And I'm not that people are coming for me, but they're coming for my book. And, you know, I've sold a ton of books to wrestling shows to people that have never read comics before and that have actually gatewayed into reading comics because of it. So there's an extreme example of a guy who got so into comics, he doesn't even watch wrestling anymore. Like, so, you know, it's a weird journey we take people on, I guess. But I really makes me happy that I've been able to, you know, obviously anything in print and whatever is a tough deal these days. And I feel sort of happy that I've been, very happy actually, that I've been able to get people to, you know, to try that and to, you know, try to expand comics in a different way, you know, from an angle that's not currently being touched.
I see that you're wearing a Catch Point shirt. So I'm wondering, what do you watch now yourself as a fan?
I watch everything. I love wrestling. Like, I love Lucha Underground. That's one of my favorite things. I love indies. I say for certain Headlock wouldn't exist if it wasn't for indie wrestling. I mean, there was a period of time in maybe 2004, 2005 when I was really burnt out. You know, WWE was the only game in town. And it's, I don't think anybody would disagree that it was probably the weakest point that they had in the last decade. And I discovered Ring of Honor and through CM Punk and Samoa Joe's series of matches, and through that discovered Chikara and all the other indies, and that totally changed my entire relationship with wrestling. And that's what really made me, like, you know, the real push for me to do Headlocks. So I like Evolve. I watch a lot of, I like Progress. I watch some Japan. I mean, I really watch anything. I think there's value. There's value in everything. I think if you like your wrestling one way, I don't know, you might not be a wrestling fan. I mean, there's a lot of WWE fans, and they're not necessarily wrestling fans all the time. But I mean, I love wrestling, and I watch two guys in a high school gym in their first match, and I can find value in that. I can find entertainment in that. You know, there's very, very few times that I've been to a wrestling match and not been able to be entertained by something, whether it be a costume, a character, an angle, a match. So if I'm only watching one thing, maybe Lucha Underground, maybe Evolve, I don't know. I definitely appreciate some of the more technical aspects of ground-based stuff. So,
do you live in the New York area?
Yeah, I live in upstate New York, Albany-ish. So I don't have a lot. I don't have anything in my town, per se. We used to have 2CW, and they closed down, which is very sad because it was a great, great promotion. But I'm 3 hours from everything. I'm 3 hours from Beyond. I'm 3 hours from Chikara. I'm 3 hours from Evolve. So I'm on the road all the time, going to shows, selling my stuff. You know, I can do it at WrestlePro, Jersey All-Pro. Like, there's so much good stuff around. So I can get out to everything, and that's how I make a lot of contacts now. That's how I meet a lot of people. And that's how I, just sort of keep, you know, we build our name one reader at a time.
Are you going to be at any upcoming shows after the con?
Actually, next weekend I'm doing a show called Wrestle Jam in Connecticut. I'm trying to come to House of Glory on the Cody and Matt Riddle match. I'm really excited for that. Other than that, some of it depends on, you know, how the books are going and how much, you know, sometimes I have to stay home to actually create the product. Yeah. I can't be selling all the time as much as I'd like to, but, I try not to plan that stuff too far out unless it's something I might not get space for, like a King of Trios or whatever. So most of the time I can just call somebody up now. I mean, most of them know me, like, hey, can I come to this show? And they'll be like, yeah, it's cool. So that's the other thing that really makes me kind of gratified, is I've been in a lot of locker rooms, and I can just go in a locker room and people are like, get that guy out of there, you know? And it's cool to have that level of respect with people that you respect what they're doing. So it's been a wild trip, man. Wild trip.
Excellent. Where can anyone listening or reading this find your work?
Everything's on Headlock Comic. It's our website. It's our Twitter, Facebook, all of that stuff. Instagram. You can find us there. It's all run by me, so I'm usually pretty good about interacting with people, and people have questions or comments. I also try to give advice to people who are trying to break into comics, because I made every mistake in the book, and I've learned from them, and I think we've built a pretty good thing. So, you know, for people that are trying to break in, I try to, give people advice if they want advice. You know, sometimes they don't want to hear it, but, you know, nobody does you any favors by sugarcoat stuff.
Just like a true ring veteran trying to help the greenback coming in.
Come sit at the learning tree, brother.
All right, Mike. I just want to thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, man. I'm always grateful when people support what we're doing.
All right, and you guys are be listening to this very early Saturday morning. So if you're at Comic-Con, come by aisle 700, booth 775, and pick up a copy.
You got anything left for this week, sir?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right, so I'm going to head into the final plug. So if you want to follow Runs on Twitter, go over to Running Wild LWOS. As I say every week, the fun stuff that people follow is him. Anything that's annoying and lame comes from me. If you want to follow me on Twitter directly, you can follow me at Rich_Laconi. You can email us at runningwildpodcast@gmail.com. Send us your comments, your questions, anything you want. Even hate mail. Go ahead. You know, any mail at this point is good mail. It's like when you're 18 and you get credit card offers. You're just excited that you're getting mail. You know, you doesn't even matter that years later you'll feel that they're trash. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on SoundCloud. You can find us on YouTube, Spreaker, and Stitcher. So wherever you get your podcast fix, you can find us there. And with that all out of the way, and Ron's getting a little bit tired of the spiel,
I just gotta take a piss.
I just want to remind you guys, if you have been listening to the podcast, that is just too
sweet. All right, bro.
All right, take care.